are listening to Tech Reads, interviews with emerging technology thought leaders. Our sponsor is Softech, the premier technology trade association that has been serving northern Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County since 1997. Our mission is to create Softech moments where people connect, explore ideas, and create new business opportunities. Learn more at softec.org.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Schwartz. I'm the host of the Tech Reads podcast, sponsored by Softech. Softech is a nonprofit that's been around for over 30 years here on the Central Coast in California, near San Luis Obispo. And our mission is to create Softech moments where people meet and create new possibilities. Originally, the organization was formed to bring technology awareness and resources and employees to the Central Coast. They succeeded in that mission. Blake Belcham is with us. He was one of the large tech companies that came to San Luis. He had history in San Luis Obispo, but he did come here and established what became a very large company that sold for over $1 billion. And Courtney is joining us.
Other end of the business spectrum.
She is going to, she understands personal branding, and you're really good at that side of it.
Yeah, well, I'm a people person.
And then Bob DeMuschel is also, he's got a long history in marketing, so he understands the importance of branding as well. And we're coming to you live from office hours here in San Luis Obispo, which they are always so gracious to provide us with the space to make this happen. So, Victoria, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like quick 2-minute bio.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Thanks for having me here today. So Victoria Peltier, I am a career-long business-to-business professional services executive, stepping into my first executive role at a really young age of 24 and a brand new mother. So there was lots going on at that point. I was in the private sector for the first number of years in that capacity. And then I've spent the last 15 or so for Fortune 100 companies running large markets, business units. I've also built and bought several businesses over the years, and I've been a part of, including some of those acquisitions and divestitures for myself, 40 M&A transactions. So I'm known as a bit of a integration and transformation queen as a result of all of those. I sit on multiple boards. I am a published author. I'm a professional public speaker. And personally, I'm a wife, a mother to two beautiful humans, one fur baby, fitness fanatic, foodie, and wine lover.
Awesome. And how did you wind up in Miami Beach?
I'm originally from Canada. So I've learned how to escape the snow and the cold. So I went from Toronto to New York, to one of the many New Yorkers who escaped at some point during COVID to down here in South Florida.
Ah, so you're a recent transplant.
Yes, 3 years now.
And are you liking it?
A lot, I like. Let's not get into the political landscape, but the weather, our friends, the house, all of that is goodness.
Yes, Florida is kind of a hot spot in the political realm and will only get hotter. So what inspired you to write the book? You know, because you published it a bit ago, right? But you're still out actively promoting and talking about it. But what really spawned you to kind of go through that? And was it a difficult process to actually get it done?
It was the second book I've written, although the first was a co-authored book. And so I only had to contribute one chapter to that one. So definitely much more of a challenge and more onerous to work through the end-to-end process of writing the book and publishing it. And I decided to write it because I've been focused on personal brand since the moment I stepped into the B2B arena. I got recruited into the world out of B2C at a financial services. And without having the vernacular 20-something years ago, I recognized that I was actually very much focused on the personal branding for myself and my team as we engaged out in the market. And I'm fortunate to have been recognized for a lot of those efforts. In fact, when I worked for IBM a number of years ago, LinkedIn had ranked me as the number one social seller worldwide. And so that's more than your brand. That's how you engage with your network. That is the network itself, the content you share. But as a result of that, IBM had asked me to develop the training for personal branding for its other executives. And then more recently, with a lot of restructure, particularly in the technology space. There's a lot of people who are out there in the market, and they're now trying to build a brand to help them as they land in their next role. And I just kept seeing people falling down and really only focused on one of what I believe are the four foundational areas of brand. So I thought if I could share the lessons I've learned with others to help them, whether it's to sell, it's to hire, or to be hired, then I would put pen to paper, so to speak.
Well, since you mentioned it, what are the four foundational branding elements or aspects that you need to consider?
Everyone seems to understand, but often stops at the first, which is the subject matter expertise or the industry in which you have studied or you have worked in. You know, so, hey, I'm like a data and analytics expert, or AI could be the newest one, or I know financial services or some other sector. And that's where they stop. So, but that is foundational, plus the elements of expertise and success and outcomes you've delivered. So that's one. The next is, what makes you, you? So there's some storytelling in this. What are the interests, passions, and values that you live by? That's the hook. When you think about people do business with people they like and trust, and therefore they want to do business with, what's that initial connection? What's maybe some of the shared lived experiences that you can bring to the table that will bridge you and build you together? So storytelling, who you are as a human. The next one, although it's very connected to the last, is what makes you different, your unique value proposition. So I've spent a lot of time in management consulting, and one of my unique value propositions and differentiators is, unlike many others in the consulting space, I will tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. That sense of radical candor is one that is uniquely who I am, but it's also what really makes me different and stand apart. So figure out for your niche audience, and you shouldn't be all things to all people, what makes you different? Why do people want to engage with you, hire you, buy from you?
And then
the fourth is legacy and impact. What do you want to be known for? So you heard in my bio all this like business experience and M&A experience. When I die, that is not what I want people to be talking about. I want it to be the other elements and the things that are connected deeply to who I am. I'm passionate around social justice and leaving workplaces, communities, and the world a better place when I leave it than when I came into it. So that's part of mine. So legacy, impact, what do you want to be known for?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think we figure we're known in our industry, but we're also kind of pigeonholed in that area of expertise, which after many, many years of doing the same thing, that's kind of right where I'm at, 15 years of self-publishing, independent publishing, kind of burned out. I don't need to prove anything. I'm doing the writer's conference now at Cuesta, which is kind of the pinnacle maybe of my role, which is good because this is the 40th year. So I'm happy about that. But I had a great story of how I went independent 15 years ago when I published my book, 50 Interviews, and I stopped telling that. Like, I don't know. I guess it got tired to me. And so whenever I'd meet somebody, I didn't tell them, but then they sometimes would look up and say, what is this 50 Interviews thing? And it's intriguing because of how it kind of kicked me out of the corporate world. But as far as then my values, those haven't really changed through the years. In fact, part of the reason I left corporate America is because it was in conflict with my values. I was being forced to do things that were outside the integrity scope of what's so important to me and saying things that weren't always true. But that's, you know, when I left IBM, part of the reason was I sat down with my boss and he said, you know, Brian, if you're going to stick around, you need to tell me what I want to hear. And I said, but I'm never going to make those numbers and you shouldn't be telling your boss we're going to make those numbers. He goes, no, you tell me what I want to hear so that I can tell him what he wants to hear so he can tell the boss. So no wonder these corporations miss their numbers. If that's the culture, they're going to have a massive miss because they're not in touch with reality. And then I also saw people spending more time on their PowerPoints for internal presentations than they did on customer proposals. I'm like, there's something wrong with this picture. So, it was always underlined, but I didn't realize that that also might be why somebody would want to hire me is because, you know, and when you're aligned, right, you find a better fit. I'm sure that you've been through places that weren't always such a good fit.
I most definitely have. I have. And misalignment is a reason why I've left some places. There's one I remember as I left, I told them there was no money after they offered me a bunch of money to stay in different roles. I said, there's no money nor role you could offer me that would solve for the current culture and leadership crisis. And if I stayed for that, I'd be a hypocrite.
I like it. So, and tying to what you just shared with us, then there's three ways that you engage. There's three acts of engagement, as you call them, right? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's really more to do with sitting down to craft your brand identity and foundation. For some, it can be quite challenging. So you need to be bold and you need to be courageous. And this word is abused, but there's no other way to, in my word to say it, is than authentic. And so those are the, you know, the acts you must take. I mean, to sit down and particularly, it depends on, I also think what generation you come from or culture or background. So, you know, the command and control type of environment I stepped into in the workforce is not what employees want today. They're looking for what I refer to as whole human leaders. And a big part of that is those acts of engagement, of being authentic, of building connection with people through, you know, trust, transparency, and the way in which we communicate. And when I talk about those foundational elements, particularly those middle two of storytelling and sharing of yourself personally, is not comfortable for many. So that's why I say you need to be bold and you need to be courageous in telling that authentic story to be really effective at building your brand and ultimately the relationships you build from there.
When Brian said that he left the corporate world with a misalignment of values and that he just couldn't do it anymore, that was enough for me to feel like he's a hero in certain ways. And that's your current story. So you've been doing this a lot of decades, but like what's most current and relevant, and that has a ton of integrity just right there. So I think that's your new story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the corporate world, I've talked to people. I don't think it's as bad as it was back in 2008 when I left. I mean, that was like, I think, one of the worst times to be in corporate America. It was just a bloodbath and everybody was, it was just cutthroat. And I was in sales. So it was like, there was this leaderboard that our president sent out every week of the sales numbers and each person's name associated with it. And this was apparently, I found out this actually is a philosophy that I think came from Chrysler or something where, you know, they posted a leaderboard every week just to basically light a fire under the sales guys. Because if you were at the bottom of that list, you knew that you were one step away from being out the door. Wow. And the worst was people walking around the company when they're having layoffs. It was like, well, it's your fault that, you know, we're losing people because you're not out there selling. But nobody was buying back in 2008 and 2009. This was the worst environment meant to be in. So I don't think that it's as bad. And Victoria, I'm glad you're finding corporations that have better values and have longer sustainability long-term. Because I think that that's a jaded view of corporate America. I would hope that if I stepped in it today, you know, it's much different. And I mean, there's still companies, there's no question, that are dysfunctional and toxic. And that's, I was in a very toxic environment. And I was having a really hard time. And I was pushed out. Like it was the pain of going back to that environment was stronger than the pain of failing at my own endeavor. So for me, the motivation is it's sort of to be pushed out the plane as opposed to volunteer to jump out the plane. I guess that's some of it. You have to be find your motivation. Bob, you've got a comment, question. Oh, Bob, you're muted.
That every time.
Do I just hit in the space bar? Okay. There
you go. Yeah, I tried hitting the space bar. It didn't work.
Okay.
I have a great interest in the personal brand area, but I have a big question about how you advise people to keep their personal brand separate from their business brand at the time they're associated with it, and what to do with the conflicts in style between the personal brand and the corporate brand.
So I'm a believer, Bob, that there shouldn't be different brands and versions of oneself. So this is Victoria. You will meet, and to quote my youngest 19-year-old, IRL in real life is the same as what you're going to see digitally online. And so
that isn't my question. My question is, is that your personal brand is not a perfect match to who your employer is at that point in time. And so I'm wondering how you advise dealing
well,
with those conflicts.
Yeah, so I was going to bridge to that first statement into, you know, your direct question on that. And I think you are more than, your brand is more than the company you work for and the role that you hold for them. And, you know, who you are, if we're going to go back to authentically, should not change. Now, there's ways in which you show up online that might not be aligned to a corporate brand, and I would often be cautious around, but I would also challenge people to ask themselves, if the brands are so misaligned, should you be working there? That might go back to some of the values pieces, purpose or impact that you personally want to have. And so I think there's, you know, a way to think about your brand is bigger than the company. So I recall, I actually even though I've been doing this for a very long time, I asked a friend of mine, a chief marketing officer for one company, to audit my brand. And I happened to be working for IBM at the time. And so it was because I was getting a lot of publicity. I'm like, Rosa, tell me, what do you think? And she's like, you need IBM directly in your tagline, right under your name on LinkedIn. And I was like, no. I am not IBM. I am more than that. And so I happen to work there and support a lot of clients. And so that's how I choose to think about it. But again, it's more around the context and the content you create and whether that creates alignment or a bit of a S storm for your company in terms of how you might be showing up as it would reflect on them. So there's mindfulness in both ways, I think.
And speaking of mindfulness, Blake has a very interesting story he can chat to or chime in on, but he was the brand for Mindbody for many years. Like, you were out there, you were intended to be the face, and it was aligned with who you were.
Yeah.
You know, he basically, from what I understand, you traveled around the country going to yoga studios and getting them enrolled. But you were a sales guy, but you were really an ambassador.
I was. Well, there was two different phases of that. At the very beginning, when the company was just me, I was the brand, right? It was indiscernible. And there were people that invested in me at the beginning because they believed in me. They wrote me checks because they trusted and believed that I was going to deliver the things that I was saying that I was going to deliver. And then later on, once we were at scale, I became known kind of as the client whisperer a little bit. And I traveled across the country and visited clients. And yeah, because I genuinely loved them and connected with them. I always felt a little bit more connected to the clients.
Than to your own company?
Than to my own company, yeah, because there were a bunch of software business geeks at the company, you know, like me. But I struggle with this personal brand thing quite a bit. I think part of it is because I'm still trying to figure out who I really am. But where does somebody go to get, other than hiring you, which it sounds like you might be a great person to say, give it to me straight. But where do you go for those subtle cues and signs that you're missing it with the way you're putting yourself out there in the world? I tend to just be, I think I probably overshare sometimes on social media and on other things because I just can't help but tell the truth. And I'm not sure that always really helps me in terms of a personal brand.
Heart on a sleeve guy, right? Isn't that the term?
Yeah, heart on the sleeve, and I just tell it like it is. And sometimes it's unpopular.
You have a podcast for that, like Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Like people who want to do that, and there's an audience for that.
Yeah.
So you have your niche.
Do you talk about
target,
Victoria, kind of reflecting and discovering who you are?
I do, and I also talk about finding that trusted group of people who will help you with that audit, who will identify the blind spots that you don't see. And as you describe who your target audience is and how you want to be known, test that with them. And I don't think you should be ashamed of heart on the sleeve or the radical candor that you have. That's what makes you. I find the people who are going to like be honest with you and also get comfortable that it's going to evolve and change over time. You know, I talked to my older son who's 24 and as he was coming out of college around developing his own brand. And you know, he doesn't have any thought about what legacy right now. And That's okay. I want to plant the seed, but it's going to change. For me, you know, my definition of success and my brand in my 20s was very different than now as I sit in my late 40s. So get comfortable with the evolution of that. There should still be a common through line, but there's going to be some changes and pivots. If you come from, you know, much like you, Brian, you come from corporate and you leave, well, there's a big pivot. So you're going to, but there's an opportunity to tell a great story.
Well, and I would tell you the first 7 years of my business, I learned more about who I was than the prior 15 years I spent in corporate America. Like my personal growth of discovering who I was, because I think in corporate America, you try to fit into the mold, right? You're the cog in the wheel. And in a lot of ways, you don't have an identity coming out of college, especially being hired right out of college. I hated my first job. I at least figured that out after 9 months. I'm like, this is not who I want to be. So I got out of that. But then I probably had a strong identity with being a sales guy, and I did that for a long time. But then I was being pushed into this uncomfortable, and it was just, you know, in sales, you're basically only as good as your last quarter. No matter how good you did, you always have kind of this anxiety, and I didn't play the politics, and I just didn't, again, I don't know. I just had I was a little bit too righteous for that. And speaking up is not appropriate to do in a lot of corporate settings when you want to speak the truth. No, you are actually silenced, and because if it rocks the boat too much, it comes back to bite you. And again, I don't know. I get taste of it here because I'm in a co-working environment, so I'm more exposed to the corporate world than I have been in like 15 years. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to ever go back to that. Like, that's enough for me, just being on the fringe of that. But at the same time, I think there's great companies, and I'm missing out on the opportunity.
I think part of the challenge is that the current corporate structure in America rewards certain flavors of mental illness.
So well said.
You know, I mean, people with
the narcissism, borderline personality.
Give results. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter how you get them, get the results.
I mean, I'm just talking to a friend on the way in who is like suffering over a battle with somebody who, I said, whether or not the person has narcissistic personality disorder or borderline personality disorder, I'm comfortable putting them in that category because of all of their actions and behaviors that align with that. This is maybe off track of personal branding, but can I segue a little bit and ask you, like,
and Bob, is that okay? You can hold off on your question. You still got your hand raised.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, Ethan, unraise it. Okay, go ahead.
Please. So, with AI, this is top of mind for me because I just launched an AI business just like a week and a half ago, and it's creating digital versions of human beings that's powered underneath by AI. So I wonder, I mean, this is bleeding edge stuff, but have you given any thought to where AI intersects with one's personal brand? And, you know, we could now there's a digital version of me that's actually out in the ChatGPT marketplace right now. And you can ask questions about
based on your source of truth.
It's actually the book that I wrote that I have found a publisher for you.
Yeah, yeah. That's
so great. I uploaded a book that's like 180,000 words.
And it's your memoir.
Yeah, it's my memoir. So you can literally go in there right now and say what inspired you to start MindBody and get like a lot of interesting stuff. I don't know if that's smart or wise or not in terms of a personal brand. I just was intrigued by it, so I threw it out there.
There is tech out there right now that will help you with that. Now, a lot of it's been more about content, but now there's some that will take the what you feed it, what it learns about you and who you are and the tone and the voice, and it will actually create like responses to tweets, for example, or other social media to, you know, operate as you in the way in which you teach it. Because I so strictly manage my own brand, I don't think the technology is there yet for me to unleash that kind of technology. I do not yet trust it to be responding on my behalf. Now, I've played around with it to see, and you actually have the ability to let it completely loose or review and edit it before it goes out. So it's been interesting, but I don't think it's there yet. But it's very much, I think, going to, you know, change the way in which we engage with our networks, and therefore connected to our brands.
If I were trying to digitally capture who you are, you know, what are the most important aspects of who you are in terms of your personal brand that I would be trying to capture?
I'm incredibly values and integrity driven. One, I'm exceptionally transparent, and very much like you, like sort of heart on my sleeve, although I wasn't always. I had a nickname as the Iron Maiden in my 20s because I wouldn't show the emotions. So that was a pivot I needed to do. And it would talk a lot about beyond what I do for business, how I use that platform to try and make, as I said earlier, workplaces, communities in the world like better place, whether it's by sharing my stories or otherwise being the voice and raising, for others, particularly from like diverse communities.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the Enneagram. Have you ever studied that, Victoria? I mean, it's amazing to me because I did a lot of years and years of self work, and it seemed like that was a shortcut because all of a sudden it showed me who I was and with extreme accuracy. And it wasn't like every Enneagram sounds the same. No, this was very distinctive the way I see the world. And even my wife, she took the test and she's a type one, and she will even look at it and say, yeah, that's me. Like if she met a type one, she would immediately connect with them. If I meet a type five, we totally connect and understand the struggles that we go through.
Five, six.
And it's to me, those are some of the things, Blake, I'll send you that, but I would study the Enneagram because there's the traits and the sort of the behaviors and the motivations behind our activities of why we do what we do, because we don't always know why we don't want to do something, like, but we power through it, and then we're miserable and we wonder why. It's not a good fit for who we are.
Yeah, we're looking at those pieces right now. Even right now, you can tell ChatGPT respond as an Aries,
Oh.
or respond as a
Type.
Capricorn,
How
and
funny.
it'll give you different answers.
How funny.
Yeah.
Well, and then there's a strengths finder where it's a very short book that you figure out what strengths you have in business so you know where to delegate and not waste your energy hitting your head against a wall like I've done with tech.
So, Victoria, what are the biggest mistakes you see people making in their personal brand?
Well, as I said earlier, I see they only focus on that one foundational element and that's it. Then I see them trying to show up online without having crafted that story. And so I see them posting content and I'm like, I'm really confused in terms of why, because I have no other context around who they are. I've got, again, a company and a job title and that's it. And so they're recognizing they need to be out them much more publicly now, again, for lots of whom are in transition or like you, Brian, they were in sales or are in sales. And so they don't have that full sort of connective tissue in terms of the entire brand identity and then how you translate that into how you show up. That's probably one of the biggest mistakes that I found. Or I find people who sort of put all that effort in and then set it and forget it. Like you need to be relevant, you need to be consistent with how you're, showing up and evolve to the point of evolve, and pivot, as social, the world stuff goes on. Like how do you react and how do you respond to some of those things?
Bob, you raised your hand.
Yeah, I guess since this is an IBM recovery group, I'll ask the question in that context. I worked with, not for, IBM for 8 years, and so I fully understand that. But they have a very precise brand, very regimented. I mean, when I worked with them in the 80s and 90s, it got down to what brand of suit you bought and what type of shirt you wore, the tie, I mean, all the way down the line. And so I'm curious, when you're in that highly regimented brand, Apple's and Microsoft's and IBM's, the Goliath, how do you reconcile the differences of your personal brand, which is okay, but it's outside the lines of the corporate brand? It's this division between personal and professional that has me confused when I look at branding.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Bob. And so what I will say is, I mean, it sounds like I left or stopped working with IBM most recently. So I will tell you they've evolved. I've heard the stories that you've talked about, and I'm seeing more and more companies who are evolving towards. And maybe it was because there's been such a focus on, inclusion and belonging, and with that comes recognizing the differences we all bring. So not trying to find that great cookie cutter. But it is a very fine line and balance. So I even saw two very different reactions and or responses from IBM. When I first joined IBM, I was still living in, I've been between Toronto and New York for much of my career, but I was in Toronto and I was on the national news regularly for a weekend business segment. Well, their marketing and communications team in Canada freaked over that. And I needed to get approved what news topics they were going to ask me about. I needed, at one point we just agreed, I'm like, do you want the benefit of IBM under my name on showing up on national TV or not? So they were uncomfortable with it. But then in the US, when I moved, to New York with them, they were very happy to leverage that because I am an extension of them. Mind you, they made me go through extra media training to ensure I was saying somewhat of the things that they approved. But then when I went to Accenture after IBM, it was a complete opposite. They wanted only Julie Sweet and her direct reports to kind of be that face, not recognizing that, I run a really large business unit for you. You'd think you'd actually want me out there. And so what we did have to do were things like, and I still have it in my LinkedIn profile, like opinions or mine do not reflect those of my company, et cetera. And so I'd be very cautious to put personal opinions out there. You can infer, because I talk about abortion access or equal rights for all, who I might vote for, but I'm never actually going to put that out on the platform. So that's kind of the lens, which when I'm talking with people in terms of once they've foundationally built the brand, how do they go forward? That kind of delicate balance between representing the company brand and who uniquely and authentically you are.
Well, and you saw Sam Altman, right, suffer the consequences because he was not in alignment with the board. Granted, he wound up winning in the end, but, it easily could have gone the other way with him. But these people who are in super high-profile positions, and he admitted that that's the thing he didn't prepare for. Like, he didn't realize that he was going to become, like, the voice of AI and all that. And so everything he said was being criticized and looked at. And then you have people like Elon Musk and Trump who just want to say things to get a rise out of the public. And, any publicity is good publicity. Wasn't that Michael Jackson's thing when he held the baby over the, remember that? But I think that if someone else is paying, giving you a paycheck, that you have to honor them. And even with SofTech is a good example. If I'm going to speak, I'm in alignment with enough of the organization that I volunteer for that I feel confident in what I'm saying and doing, but I also don't get a paycheck for them. So it's not like I'm going to lose my job if I say something that, but I'm not going to get myself in trouble either. Go ahead, Blake.
I have a question about, I was just going to ask about that. What you think about politics in terms of personal brand, and also if you have an opinion on that in terms of corporate branding. I personally, I'm at a point now where I used to, back when I was at Mindbody, and I was glad that we got on board with certain issues. I was comfortable with that. I'm no longer even comfortable with that. From a corporate perspective, I would like to see politics just taken out of the corporate world because it's just so polar. So charged and so polarizing, and I feel like it's detrimental. So, but then there's the personal politics as well, right? Like Jennifer Say, who was the vice president of Levi's, was famously run out of Levi's because she was posting things on social media where she thought the schools should remain open during COVID. And that was so counter to their internal politics that they ran her out of Levi's. So do you have any thoughts on politics and whether or not you put a Ukrainian flag or a Palestinian flag in your profile, or you take issues on the, you take a perspective on these things personally and as a company in terms of brand?
I think it's incredibly difficult for a corporate brand to be taking more political stances for the reasons you've just said. They're so polarizing and you've got customers across the gamut. However, where I would state, I think you do need to put, the flag down is on things that are connected deeply to the corporate values. And so if you talk about wanting to have a workplace that is diverse and inclusive for all, then you need to be standing up for things that don't honor inclusive, environment, whether that be in community or more broadly. So I think you can do it without being, as direct as putting a flag, a country's flag out there, but rather talk about the commitment you have to the values you stand for, purpose, and the impact that you want to have. And then at the personal brand standpoint, I would actually take almost the same line. So again, I will never post. I might talk around where I would vote politically, but instead I just focus on, again, sort of values. Who am I? What do I stand for? What's the platform I choose? So again, I will tend to steer away from that kind of much more direct political conversation connected to my brand. And again, more around, you know, values and belief system.
Gordon?
I don't post on social media a lot, but when COVID happened and I realized I was on one side of the fence, I knew that I didn't want to label myself and cut off half of my potential clients. But now I find that spiritual common ground is like universal, and saying, you know, this whole two-headed beast thing that, like, we haven't had real change and peace ever. And that so many people are like reading 1984 and Brave New World now. It's so inspiring that a lot of people are waking up to the charade of it all in the media and how manipulated they've been. And they're dropping out, and it's inspiring and exciting. And I just keep falling back on spiritual. Not that I'm even sending out newsletters right now or posting on social media, but I know that's coming up. I'm like changing my SEO on my website and getting more of my keywords in there and studying about metabolism. So I'm like in this reworking phase, but I know that everybody wants peace, and we all
enjoy the common thread.
We have this perennial philosophy is true for all of us.
No one trusts politicians. We can all agree on them.
Let's create a different culture.
Well, and on that, Bob, did you have another question, or you just raised your hand from before?
I'm sorry.
You know, the reality is the scary numbers of the fact that 90% of all the content we're going to see online is going to be AI generated, and the deep fakes and the manipulation that we've seen with social media and influencing and basically spreading fake news. So I think that ultimately we're just not going to trust anything we see come across the internet, unless if we hear it from a close friend and they have a personal experience and they can tell a story about, you know, maybe backing up their beliefs. Because I've sit next to people with the polar opposite view, and you could get in a fighting match and a fist fight. But at the end, we both agreed, hey, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. We're never going to agree.
Right.
And if I was sitting in your shoes, I'd probably have your opinion. If you were in my shoes, you would see the world that I do, and just understand that we all are going to have our own opinions. And, you know, complacency, there's a little bit of a fear that, you know, people aren't speaking up at all, which isn't good for the world, because if you see something and you don't say anything, it's not the right way to address the problem.
But if you're not true to yourself, you can't be authentic, and you violate the basic rule of that personal branding. So to some degree, you know, you have to embrace that. I'm going to offend some people because I'm me, and I'm going to offend them. And I have been called a lot of things over the years, not all of them pleasant. And you know, the people that like me call me brutally honest. Other people use more colorful adjectives. I think that's what's interesting about your topic, Victoria, is the personal branding of you know, how do you regulate that, and how does it evolve over the course of the evolution of your personal brand? I mean, my personal brand when I was 40 would be quite different than it is today, in even more radically when I was 20. And so it evolves over time as we do. And so it's interesting, because now AI is going to have all the things that were said about me 20 years ago, and now, you know, it's regurgitating it. The AI has become biased. We as humans can't tell real stuff from fake stuff. So how do we expect technology to be able to do it? And I guess, just to come back to the question for Victoria, is that, you know, from a branding standpoint, you know, how do you cope with the fact that you're constantly evolving, and not in little tiny pieces all the time, sometimes in big steps?
So I think we need to get very comfortable with the fact that we are going to evolve. There are going to be big shifts and pivots, but be bold around coming out with the, you know, talking about it when it changes. Like, don't expect that the audience is going to figure that out. It, particularly if it's one of these seismic shifts, come out, tell the story and where and why the shift, you know, has come about. And I do think I love how, you know, with, you know, age and maturity and comfort and confidence in our own skin, you know, I think of maybe a little bit, Courtney, as you, like, so I'm queer. I came out at 14 as bisexual. I was married to a woman for 11 years. I happen to now be with my husband for almost 11 years, but I'm still very openly queer. In my 20s, although I openly brought my wife to events, I was cautious and played the pronoun game because I was worried about clients. I didn't. All my colleagues were going to know, but I was like, oh, but what if my client who's like paying the bills, like how is he or she going to feel? And so I did the, my other half, my better half, like all the kind of stuff. Now I am unapologetic about the fact that I was married to a woman. I have a trans male son. This is who I am. And this is what I stand for. That is come with confidence in who I am and being more entrenched to, you know, values and the things I'm committed to. That actually wasn't an evolution. It's just my ability to speak it in a very different platform. But I have made other shifts in terms of how I showed up as a leader and needed to be conscious around being very different. That was an actual, you know, internal need to change, as well as how I showed up much more broadly. And so I'd say lean into the discomfort, lean into the growth and the change, but be really transparent with your audience when that change takes place.
Yeah, and I think you made the point, just don't assume they understand who you are. You need to reiterate it and see how you're coming across, and probably do a regular audit of your own personal brand, right? Maybe ask some other people, and you know, don't forget that you had certain things that worked.
Victoria, is it a good idea for you to do the audit of yourself, or to look for outside for that audit? Because you can't see what you can't see.
I think you absolutely need external help, although I do think you need to reframe sometimes some elements of your brand, and then how, like, hey, when I'm writing that, does this content really talk about who I am or how I want to be known? Or is it just me at selling something, a product or a service for my company? So I think there's some pieces you can and should do for yourself around reframing consistently and updating and making sure that it's aligned. But you absolutely need people like you, Bob. I don't know what colorful adjectives they're using, but around being brutally honest with me to say, are you sure? Like, did you think about before you posted this? Is this how you want to be known? Find those trusted people.
And I've heard that clients want to know your vulnerabilities, your real story, like, I don't know, childhood traumas, maybe things that make you human, but that you wouldn't think to share as a business front. When you humanize yourself, it makes them feel safe with you.
Exactly. Yeah. It builds trust.
Yeah.
And that you never know what someone's going through. Like, that's the thing that shocked, you know, I forget sometimes, like, what's going on? Like, what happened that you have no clue, that they'll never reveal?
Right. But like that low-level cortisol you experienced in the corporate world, you said that anxiety, they could be going through that in a bad dynamic in a relationship behind closed doors for two-thirds of the day. I mean, what people go through, we don't know. Like, I've heard spiritually, everybody's waging a great battle. Like, no doubt, every one of our souls is waging a great battle.
Oh, your past lives influence who you showed up this time, maybe? And yeah, it's cool. So we're coming up on an hour, Victoria. Where are you planning to take this? So you're in your 40s. You still got another good 20 years, maybe, of work in the world, yet you're not retired yet in Florida. what do you want to do, like, in the next 5, 10 years? Where's your focus these days?
So I made a decision to leave my last employer because it wasn't a fit. I don't do things that don't bring me personal or professional joy or value. And so I've been in transition. Fortunate to have had a number of offers come in since I left, but I want to find the right one. So I'm doing lots of strategic advisory. So I've built a portfolio. That's the other thing I give a lot of advice more to like leaders and as they're thinking about their careers. I've built the portfolio career now. I choose not to make that full time for me, but it's there for me that if I ever retire, and my husband jokes, he does not think I will ever retire. But if I do, it's already well established. And that's that mix of advisory, board, speaking, authorship. I am looking, my goal would be to retire as the CEO of a publicly traded company. So my next hop is actually probably taking all the M&A experience and operating experience into the private equity world, running a portfolio company, but that'll be the hop to take me to that final destination. And I continue to look to stand on bigger and bigger stages. I was invited to speak at TED here, TEDx here in Miami last week. So I'll share with you the link once it's made public on the TED website. That was great. Very different format than I'm used to, but I loved it. And so I want to, hope to reach more and more, bigger stages as well with the various talks that I do.
That's
Oh,
great.
and I will say on the personal front, my kids are 24 and soon to be 20. And I've told them one, if not both, will make me a grandmother, but I was a young mother by choice. Don't make me a young grandmother by accident. But I do want to be a grandmother at some point.
That's wonderful. Any other questions for Victoria?
This was great. Thank you.
So if our listeners want to get a copy of the book, right, head over to Amazon and then your website, it's big. We'll put a link to it because your last name is a large spell.
Yeah. Blame the French Canadian husband for that. But yes, my website, they can link out wherever. They can see what's going on from there.
Well, best of luck to you, and thank you for sharing today and taking some time with us. We'll stay after here when I stop recording, but for those listeners, tune back in for the next episode of Tech Read, where we get to talk to business leaders, technology leaders, authors who've established themselves as thought leaders and subject matter experts. So thanks for your time, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Tech Reads, sponsored by Softech. If you enjoy today's show, please subscribe and share it with your colleagues. If you have comments, questions, or want to suggest an author for a future episode, visit Softech at softec.org and click on the Tech Reads link.